Hello. This is the International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2011.
This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. In this part, you will hear a podcast about a school's science and engineering exhibition. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words and or numbers for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Welcome to the One World Fair 2011. This is a podcast with all the latest news about our 2-day school science and engineering exhibition. Find out about what's on when, as well as news about the One World Science and Engineering competition. As we are getting close to the big day, here is an overview of the timings and key events. We start at 9 o'clock on Friday the 12th of March. When you arrive, please go to the registration desk to collect your ID badges and exhibition bag. The main hall opens at 9:30. From 10 to 4, there are presentations and workshops. At 6:30 that evening, there is a dinner for all One World supporters. On Saturday the 13th of March, registration starts slightly later at 9:30, and the main hall opens at 10. Presentations and workshops will run from 10:30 to 5. At 5:30, the award ceremony for the science and engineering competition begins. The ceremony is expected to finish at 7 p.m. and is followed by an awards party until 10 p.m. Now, some of the highlights of Friday's programme. At 10:30 in the lecture theatre, there is Body Talk, which will cover everything to do with the mind and body, from sport and medicine to food and psychology. Find out about all the exciting ways in which we can create a fit and healthy body. At 2:30, there is an amazing presentation by a team from Edinburgh University on their supercar. They will be driving a car powered only by coffee beans from Edinburgh to the exhibition. They will be telling you about what happened on their journey. You will have an opportunity to talk to the team and have a look at their car, which will be on display in the main hall. At 3 o'clock, there is a workshop by the Society for the Environment. The task for the teams will be to construct a simple solar water heater from parts, and the group which can raise the temperature of 5 litres of water the most over 30 minutes will be the winner. Come along and watch the fun in the Princess Rooms. On Saturday at 11 in the Princess Rooms, a team from the University of Exeter will be presenting Plants That Bite Back, where you will see how certain groups of plants have evolved to catch insects, which they then use as a source of food. you will get a chance to look at the Venus flytrap under the microscope and watch videos of these plants in action. In the afternoon, there will be lively demonstrations, audience participation, and entertaining explanations on the science of football. Make your way to the main hall and find out how to bend the ball, try out the best shin pads on the market, and learn about what sort of diet a footballer needs to eat in order to run about 7 miles during a game. During the whole of Saturday, One World will also feature a number of stands in the entrance hall, where you can get careers advice if you are considering a job in science, technology, engineering, or maths. On Saturday evening, the winners of the school science and engineering competition will be announced at a special ceremony. We have had a record number of entrants. Last year, the Young Scientist of the Year was Lucy Hetherington, who carried out an in-depth study of dinosaur bones along a stretch of coastline in Wales. The Young Engineer of the Year was Tom Hadfield from London, who developed change machines that can be used at supermarket checkouts. Both students won £2,000, a certificate, and a once-in-a-lifetime trip to visit NASA in Florida. So, join us on Saturday evening to see who the winners are this year.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Welcome to the One World Fair 2011. This is a podcast with all the latest news about our 2-day school science and engineering exhibition. Find out about what's on when, as well as news about the One World Science and Engineering competition. As we are getting close to the big day, here is an overview of the timings and key events. We start at 9 o'clock on Friday the 12th of March. When you arrive, please go to the registration desk to collect your ID badges and exhibition bag. The main hall opens at 9:30. From 10 to 4, there are presentations and workshops. At 6:30 that evening, there is a dinner for all One World supporters. On Saturday the 13th of March, registration starts slightly later at 9:30, and the main hall opens at 10. Presentations and workshops will run from 10:30 to 5. At 5:30, the award ceremony for the science and engineering competition begins. The ceremony is expected to finish at 7 p.m. and is followed by an awards party until 10 p.m. Now, some of the highlights of Friday's programme. At 10:30 in the lecture theatre, there is Body Talk, which will cover everything to do with the mind and body, from sport and medicine to food and psychology. Find out about all the exciting ways in which we can create a fit and healthy body. At 2:30, there is an amazing presentation by a team from Edinburgh University on their supercar. They will be driving a car powered only by coffee beans from Edinburgh to the exhibition. They will be telling you about what happened on their journey. You will have an opportunity to talk to the team and have a look at their car, which will be on display in the main hall. At 3 o'clock, there is a workshop by the Society for the Environment. The task for the teams will be to construct a simple solar water heater from parts, and the group which can raise the temperature of 5 litres of water the most over 30 minutes will be the winner. Come along and watch the fun in the Princess Rooms. On Saturday at 11 in the Princess Rooms, a team from the University of Exeter will be presenting Plants That Bite Back, where you will see how certain groups of plants have evolved to catch insects, which they then use as a source of food. You will get a chance to look at the Venus flytrap under the microscope and watch videos of these plants in action. In the afternoon, there will be lively demonstrations, audience participation, and entertaining explanations on the science of football. Make your way to the main hall and find out how to bend the ball, try out the best shin pads on the market, and learn about what sort of diet a footballer needs to eat in order to run about 7 miles during a game. During the whole of Saturday, One World will also feature a number of stands in the entrance hall, where you can get careers advice if you are considering a job in science, technology, engineering, or maths. On Saturday evening, the winners of the school science and engineering competition will be announced at a special ceremony. We have had a record number of entrants. Last year, the Young Scientist of the Year was Lucy Hetherington, who carried out an in-depth study of dinosaur bones along a stretch of coastline in Wales. The Young Engineer of the Year was Tom Hadfield from London, who developed change machines that can be used at supermarket checkouts. Both students won £2,000, a certificate, and a once-in-a-lifetime trip to visit NASA in Florida. So, join us on Saturday evening to see who the winners are this year.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part 2. In this part, you will hear Dr. Thomas, a vet, being interviewed by a student about his job. Listen and answer the questions. Indicate your answer by marking the box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and indicate your new answer with a cross. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Hello, Dr. Thomas. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you about your job.
That's fine.
Firstly, how would you describe your job?
When you work as a vet, you've got to do two things. You treat the animals, and then you've got to deal with the owners. Sometimes looking after the animals is the least stressful part of my day, and I make the joke that one end of the leash is easy to deal with, the other end of the leash is very difficult to deal with. If you can't deal with individuals, and that includes your employees as well as the animals, you won't get very far in this job.
And what does your work involve?
I come in at 7:30 and I begin the treatment of sick animals, and I have my practice a lot different than others. I believe that the animal is in better care at home than it is staying here at the practice all night without anybody around it. So all my sick animals come in between 8 and 9 in the morning, the ones I'm treating on a daily basis. I get through that, answer telephone calls, and then spend 2 hours doing surgery, which is usually routine stuff. And then you have emergencies which come through the door unannounced.
Is that it for the day?
No, that just takes us up to lunchtime. After lunch, I spend from 1 until 5 doing scheduled appointments, which is usually dealing with animal health care and wellness. My practice today is a small animal practice, but when I did large animals as well, I worked from 6 in the morning until 10 at night, all day, every day. Now I'm here about 8 hours a day, and I try to put everything I can do into 8 hours, and that's Monday to Friday, with emergencies at night, and Saturdays from 8 to 12 doing routine stuff. I try not to do any of my surgeries at weekends, and then Sunday, hopefully, I sit down and I don't have anything to do.
How did you decide to become a vet?
From when I was young, I was fascinated with animals and with surgery for some reason. I loved television programmes about surgery, but at the same time, I wasn't really interested in dealing with people in a medical type of way. Like everyone, I suppose, I wanted to be an astronaut when I was about 7, but I did have this fascination for animals and medicine, and surgery in particular. I decided to become a vet later than a lot of people. Most people definitely decide they want to be a vet when they're about 14 or 15. I had started a degree in zoology after working in my father's company for a few years when I realised I wanted to be a vet, so I changed course after my first year of university.
What do you like about what you do?
I like the satisfaction of saving an animal's life. I like the things that we do to make animals live longer, live more productive lives. Now, our cats are living to 17 or 18 years of age, and when I started to practice, if you had a 14-year-old cat, it was old. If there was money in it, I would still do large animals, as I found that the most rewarding. Delivering calves and looking after the cows was lots of fun, but I couldn't afford to carry on. If I'd wanted to earn lots, I would have specialised in horses. Now those vets get lots of money.
May I ask, how much money do vets make?
I don't mind telling you. You know, a vet working in a single-man practice like mine that's established would have a turnover of £250,000 a year, but would take home about £50,000. But there are multi-vet practices with 3 or 4 vets, and these practices are multi-million pound practices, and some of these vets are making £100,000. But it takes a long time to get that, and they have a lot of people working for them.
And is there anything you dislike about your work?
Let me think. Well, I don't mind the hours I work. Some people do, but not me. I sometimes get really fed up with all the administration. All the forms and other paperwork eats up a lot of my time in the evenings. But people complaining about a bill or, you know, it's just kind of... You can be having a great day and somebody comes in and complains about their bill and it just ruins your whole day.
How does your practice earn money?
Disease prevention, vaccinations, routine healthcare probably generate a good income. Surgery is another source of income. The sale of healthcare products such as flea products, heartworm tablets, even prescription food is also very profitable. Probably the thing that you get least for in terms of your time is diagnosing and operating on sick animals, as far as the percentage of time you spend with the animal compared to what you spend on routine things such as vaccinations and healthcare. But those are the areas where the practice makes money.
Is there anything you find exciting about this career?
The exciting part of what I do in this practice is surgery. I enjoy it because it's just me and the cat in there. I think that's probably the most rewarding part, saving lives, making lives better. Taking care of abandoned wildlife that people find has been an interesting part of my work here in this practice. I treat them for diseases and send them to a facility for release back into the wild. But when I was doing large animals, I was delivering calves, and doing that was the most exciting part because every case was different.
What are your goals for the future?
Well, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I want to be able to slow down in 5 years. I don't ever foresee completely retiring unless I'm unable to perform. This has been my life work, so I'm not going to give it up that easily. I certainly don't want to give it up that easily.
Dr. Thomas, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. Now listen a second time and check your answers. Hello, Dr. Thomas. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you about your job.
That's fine.
Firstly, how would you describe your job?
When you work as a vet, you've got to do two things. You treat the animals, and then you've got to deal with the owners. Sometimes looking after the animals is the least stressful part of my day. And I make the joke that one end of the leash is easy to deal with. The other end of the leash is very difficult to deal with. If you can't deal with individuals, and that includes your employees, as well as the animals, you won't get very far in this job.
And what does your work involve?
I come in at 7:30 and I begin the treatment of sick animals, and I have my practice a lot different than others. I believe that the animal is in better care at home than it is staying here at the practice all night without anybody around it. So all my sick animals come in between 8 and 9 in the morning, the ones I'm treating on a daily basis. I get through that, answer telephone calls, and then spend 2 hours doing surgery, which is usually routine stuff. And then you have emergencies which come through the door unannounced.
Is that it for the day?
No, that just takes us up to lunchtime. After lunch, I spend from 1 until 5 doing scheduled appointments, which is usually dealing with animal health care and wellness. My practice today is a small animal practice, but when I did large animals as well, I worked from 6 in the morning until 10 at night, all day, every day. Now I'm here about 8 hours a day, and I try to put everything I can do into 8 hours, and that's Monday to Friday, with emergencies at night, and Saturdays from 8 to 12 doing routine stuff. I try not to do any of my surgeries at weekends, and then Sunday, hopefully, I sit down and I don't have anything to do.
How did you decide to become a vet?
From when I was young, I was fascinated with animals and with surgery for some reason. I loved television programmes about surgery, but at the same time, I wasn't really interested in dealing with people in a medical type of way. Like everyone, I suppose, I wanted to be an astronaut when I was about 7, but I did have this fascination for animals and medicine, and surgery in particular. I decided to become a vet later than a lot of people. Most people definitely decide they want to be a vet when they're about 14 or 15. I had started a degree in zoology after working in my father's company for a few years when I realised I wanted to be a vet, so I changed course after my first year of university.
What do you like about what you do?
I like the satisfaction of saving an animal's life. I like the things that we do to make animals live longer, live more productive lives. Now, our cats are living to 17 or 18 years of age, and when I started to practice, if you had a 14-year-old cat, it was old. If there was money in it, I would still do large animals, as I found that the most rewarding. Delivering calves and looking after the cows was lots of fun, but I couldn't afford to carry on. If I'd wanted to earn lots, I would have specialised in horses. Now those vets get lots of money.
May I ask, how much money do vets make?
I don't mind telling you. You know, a vet working in a single-man practice like mine that's established would have a turnover of £250,000 a year, but would take home about £50,000. But there are multi-vet practices with 3 or 4 vets, and these practices are multi-million pound practices, and some of these vets are making £100,000. But it takes a long time to get that, and they have a lot of people working for them.
And is there anything you dislike about your work?
Let me think. Well, I don't mind the hours I work. Some people do, but not me. I sometimes get really fed up with all the administration. All the forms and other paperwork eats up a lot of my time in the evenings. But people complaining about a bill or, you know, it's just kind of... You can be having a great day and somebody comes in and complains about their bill and it just ruins your whole day.
How does your practice earn money?
Disease prevention, vaccinations, routine healthcare probably generate a good income. Surgery is another source of income. The sale of healthcare products such as flea products, heartworm tablets, even prescription food is also very profitable. Probably the thing that you get least for in terms of your time is diagnosing and operating on sick animals, as far as the percentage of time you spend with the animal compared to what you spend on routine things such as vaccinations and healthcare. But those are the areas where the practice makes money.
Is there anything you find exciting about this career?
The exciting part of what I do in this practice is surgery. I enjoy it because it's just me and the cat in there. I think that's probably the most rewarding part, saving lives, making lives better. Taking care of abandoned wildlife that people find has been an interesting part of my work here in this practice. I treat them for diseases and send them to a facility for release back into the wild. But when I was doing large animals, I was delivering calves, and doing that was the most exciting part because every case was different.
What are your goals for the future?
Well, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I want to be able to slow down in 5 years. I don't ever foresee completely retiring unless I'm unable to perform. This has been my life work, so I'm not going to give it up that easily. I certainly don't want to give it up that easily.
Dr. Thomas, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an extract from a radio program on chewing gum. Listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than two words and or numbers for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Love it or hate it, chewing gum is part of everyday life. One third of British people chew gum, and more than 1 billion packets of chewing gum are sold in Britain each year. Most of us are familiar with the negative aspects of chewing gum when we find it stuck on chairs or under desks, or stuck to our shoes after stepping on some in the street. But there are also many benefits to chewing gum. Chewing gum in various forms has existed for over 7,000 years. We know this because archaeologists have recently discovered chewing gum made of birch tree resin at a Stone Age site in Finland. The habit of chewing gum was also popular in ancient Greece, where people used the resin from a small tree called the mastika, found mainly in Greece and Turkey. Greek women particularly enjoyed this gum, as they found it cleaned their teeth and sweetened their breath. American Indians also chewed a gum-like resin from a pine tree. Modern chewing gum was developed by accident in the 1860s. Dr. Thomas Adams, an inventor, thought that chicle, a milky juice from a tree found in Central America, could replace rubber. His plan failed. But then he discovered that it made a good chewing gum. Some years later, a flower factory owner called William Wrigley bought the rights to the gum and also discovered a way to flavour it with mint. It was not long before chicle gum replaced resin gums because it was smoother and chewier and it held its flavour better. In the 1920s, Walter Diemer, an accountant with a chewing gum factory, who experimented with gum recipes in his spare time, discovered the right combination of ingredients to create a gum strong enough to stretch when filled with air. This type of gum became known as bubble gum. Diemer used a pink dye for his new gum, as this was the only one available at the time, and this colour is still used today. The ingredients of chewing gum have changed very little since William Wrigley started making it in 1892, although chicle has been replaced with synthetic gums. In recent years, a sugar-free variety has been developed. In Europe, this type of gum accounts for between 40% and 85% of the total chewing gum market. It is common for people to say that chewing gum is bad for the teeth, but many dentists now believe that chewing sugarless gum after meals has health benefits. The reason for this is that tooth decay occurs when acid attacks the tooth enamel. It can take 2 hours for these acids to be washed away naturally, but chewing gum can remove them in minutes and so slow down the process of tooth decay. Chewing gum is said to provide other benefits. Many believe that it increases concentration. Some research has found that activity in the area of the brain that is important for memory increases when we chew. Some teachers have even encouraged students to chew gum during tests, as it has been found to reduce stress. Another benefit of chewing gum is that it helps deal with the annoying popping in the ears you get when flying. However, people who chew gum too often can suffer from a very painful jaw condition. Chewing gum is also useful for carrying out temporary repairs, such as sealing car radiators and tyres, fixing radios, and even leaking pipes. People who throw their chewing gum away carelessly are causing problems for local governments, who have the job of cleaning up the mess. In the UK alone, it is estimated that they spend £150 million dealing with chewing gum litter. As chewing gum is difficult to remove, specialist companies have to be used to deal with it. Some people have called for a chewing gum tax to pay for the clean-up costs. Others have suggested that there should be fines. In one country, Singapore, certain chewing gums have been banned since 1992. Chewing gum is also particularly difficult to remove from clothing. One effective way to remove it is to place the item in a freezer for several hours. After that, the hardened chewing gum can be scraped off. Any gum remaining can be removed using a toothbrush. Carpets can also be treated in a similar way with ice packs. Chewing gum makers are now looking into the possibility of biodegradable gum. Scientists are looking again at chicle, which can decompose in as little as a month. This is a lot better than the 5-year lifespan of other gums. A consumer test of chicle found it satisfying, but a little hard to get going. The other problem at present is the price. It is double that of gums usually found in most supermarkets.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Love it or hate it, chewing gum is part of everyday life. 1/3 of British people chew gum, and more than 1 billion packets of chewing gum are sold in Britain each year. Most of us are familiar with the negative aspects of chewing gum when we find it stuck on chairs or under desks, or stuck to our shoes after stepping on some in the street. But there are also many benefits to chewing gum. Chewing gum in various forms has existed for over 7,000 years. We know this because archaeologists have recently discovered chewing gum made of birch tree resin at a Stone Age site in Finland. The habit of chewing gum was also popular in ancient Greece, where people used the resin from a small tree called the mastika, found mainly in Greece and Turkey. Greek women particularly enjoyed this gum, as they found it cleaned their teeth and sweetened their breath. American Indians also chewed a gum-like resin from a pine tree. Modern chewing gum was developed by accident in the 1860s. Dr. Thomas Adams, an inventor, thought that chicle, a milky juice from a tree found in Central America, could replace rubber. His plan failed, but then he discovered that it made a good chewing gum. Some years later, a flower factory owner called William Wrigley bought the rights to the gum and also discovered a way to flavour it with mint. It was not long before chicle gum replaced resin gums because it was smoother and chewier, and it held its flavour better. In the 1920s, Walter Diemer, an accountant with a chewing gum factory, who experimented with gum recipes in his spare time, discovered the right combination of ingredients to create a gum strong enough to stretch when filled with air. This type of gum became known as bubble gum. Diemer used a pink dye for his new gum, as this was the only one available at the time, and this colour is still used today. The ingredients of chewing gum have changed very little since William Wrigley started making it in 1892, although chicle has been replaced with synthetic gums. In recent years, a sugar-free variety has been developed. In Europe, this type of gum accounts for between 40% and 85% of the total chewing gum market. It is common for people to say that chewing gum is bad for the teeth, but many dentists now believe that chewing sugarless gum after meals has health benefits. The reason for this is that tooth decay occurs when acid attacks the tooth enamel. It can take 2 hours for these acids to be washed away naturally, but chewing gum can remove them in minutes and so slow down the process of tooth decay. Chewing gum is said to provide other benefits. Many believe that it increases concentration. Some research has found that activity in the area of the brain that is important for memory increases when we chew. Some teachers have even encouraged students to chew gum during tests, as it has been found to reduce stress. Another benefit of chewing gum is that it helps deal with the annoying popping in the ears you get when flying. However, people who chew gum too often can suffer from a very painful jaw condition. Chewing gum is also useful for carrying out temporary repairs, such as sealing car radiators and tyres, fixing radios, and even leaking pipes. People who throw their chewing gum away carelessly are causing problems for local governments, who have the job of cleaning up the mess. In the UK alone, it is estimated that they spent £150 million dealing with chewing gum litter. As chewing gum is difficult to remove, specialist companies have to be used to deal with it. Some people have called for a chewing gum tax to pay for the clean-up costs. Others have suggested that there should be fines. In one country, Singapore, certain chewing gums have been banned since 1992. Chewing gum is also particularly difficult to remove from clothing. One effective way to remove it is to place the item in a freezer for several hours. After that, the hardened chewing gum can be scraped off. Any gum remaining can be removed using a toothbrush. Carpets can also be treated in a similar way with ice packs. Chewing gum makers are now looking into the possibility of biodegradable gum. Scientists are looking again at chicle, which can decompose in as little as a month. This is a lot better than the 5-year lifespan of other gums. A consumer test of chicle found it satisfying, but a little hard to get going. The other problem at present is the price. It is double that of gums usually found in most supermarkets.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.